We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror.
Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Hey, will you shut up?
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee. Split Zone Duo, NFL podcast du jour. Stephen Godfrey, Alex Kirshner. We've talked about this in the past. I think we talked about it in March or April. We said that we were going to look up and say, man, the Texas Longhorns should have won more games with Bijan Robinson. Godfrey, how long has it taken to very, very clearly feel that?
I've had to, you know, if it lasts for more than 4 to 6 hours, you see a doctor. Boys.
At your age, that's for sure.
Look, I said this on the single wing. Over my right shoulder, your left, is a slightly sacrilegious sort of center of worship right here. It's working. Okay? I would like to thank my God, who apparently likes a solid run game, who's okay with pulling the center out to do all kinds of weird blocking. I would like, you know what? I don't want to. How long can we stretch the bit, Richard? You tell
Not
me.
Long.
And then I'll tell you how
Not
long I can
Let's
go.
Keep it
shut
moving.
Up, Alex.
Alex,
Let's
keep
shut
it
up,
moving.
Alex.
Alex, how are we feeling about northern, well, eastern Iowa? You're east of Iowa, right? East, northeast of Iowa in Pittsburgh?
The Steelers have fully Iowa-fied, as many of us were noting the other night, in that the defense scored more points than the offense in the Steelers' last game. And also the crowd chanted for the firing of the offensive coordinator, whose name enough people know to audibly, clearly chant for his job, which isn't, that's not always how it is. Like, you know what I mean? Every fan base has plenty of very educated fans who know beyond the head coach who's on the staff, but I don't think it's that common to get thousands of people who know to chant to fire like Brian Ferentz or Matt Canada.
I don't think at the NFL level it's very common at all.
A certain level of disdain on the part of the fan base to know it well enough to chant for it clearly enough that that the TV microphones pick it up.
Yeah, you're right. I would like to go back to one thing, Richard.
Here's
just
the way.
Because you're the intelligent football schematic person here. What would that Alabama-Texas game had been like if Bijan was not in the NFL right now? Like, we could be talking about the most lopsided regular season loss in like the Saban era.
Might have gotten biblical. But I will say this, Alex, I think we have stumbled into the new and better way to do the Brian Ferentz thing every week.
Yeah.
And I'll kick it to you to see if you want to do this. Now it's Brian Ferentz, not only versus the 25-point margin, but it's versus the Steelers points per game margin as well. And apparently defensive touchdowns count for the Steelers.
It's also Brian Ferentz versus artificial intelligence as a way to move public opinion. I don't know if you guys saw there was...
Wait, what?
All right, going around the internet the other day, there was some football Twitter account did like a pretty good deep fake that you had to look at twice to realize was fake. And a lot of people didn't, by the way, but you had to look at it a few times to make sure that it was fake, where Brian Ferentz, in a very Brian Ferentz-y cadence, basically chided the Iowa media to get off his ass, or more specifically, to get a stepladder and climb down out of his ass for, you know, asking him so many questions about the offense. It was pretty good. A lot of people got duped by it. That was the moment for me that I realized we're in real trouble with AI. Was like, if we're doing this with offensive coordinator Monday press conferences in football, like, we are not as a country going to get through the 24 election cycle if we're doing this with offensive coordinators on a Monday.
Would you say that
we're just not going to get through it?
It was AI is the new.
Would you say
hacked.
That it's broken contain, Alex?
I didn't tweet that. I was hacked.
I would say it's broken contain. And Richard, that's a lovely segue. Something else that's broken contain this week, I think more than ever before, and it had already done so, is the Colorado Buffalo story. Dion was on 60 Minutes on Sunday night.
For the second time in
that
a year.
That is a stage, yes. He was also there at Jackson State. That's a stage that is limited to very, very few college football people. Both ESPN and Fox were in Boulder last weekend for their pregame shows. It was the most watched game of the weekend by a mile. It was one of the most watched late night Eastern time games in the history of college football. Lil Wayne
or football
wrapped Colorado out onto the field.
Yeah, man. Yeah, he did.
Yeah. We have talked about Colorado on the field every week so far. We will talk about them more this week because they're a ranked team and they're playing one of the games of the week. By the way, it's a great week. Can't wait for the tasting menu this week. This has become, certainly in the time that we, the three of us, and this is our fourth season together, have been doing this podcast, the biggest story that college football has had. It just has, which is maybe surprising because it's Colorado, maybe not because it's Deion Sanders. I think that where I wanted to go to start the show this week is not to the on-field, but to everything that is happening around this program right now and what it illustrates about the way that things are in college football at the moment, how it's gotten to this point. There's a short answer for this wild buffo interest in college football, and it's two words. It's Deion Sanders. But there's a much longer answer, too, which I think goes beyond the presence of one celebrity in a vacuum. And okay. Richard, I was wondering what has most landed on your brain this week about why Colorado just seems to be blotting out the sun when it comes to the national discussion around this sport.
A few things, obviously. First and foremost, like it's funny that Godfrey mentioned the Alabama-Texas game a couple of minutes ago, because I don't think before the season you would have been able to tell me that Colorado State at 10 o'clock would have like smoked Alabama-Texas from just a pure like people that watched it number. Like that's just an insane thing to me. It's one of multiple insane things to me. We've talked about the football. We've talked about what it looks like on the field. Competent, attractive. Obviously, they're going to score a ton. Obviously, they have skill players that look. If you haven't changed your priors from this team's probably going to go 4-8 to, if you have not upgraded that prior, you're an idiot, because clearly this is not a 3-9, 4-8 football team with what they have. The on the field is its own fascinating story of competence and talent acquisition and a quick retool and all that sort of stuff. I think the off the field stuff is in more than a few ways fascinating. I think that as far as, first of all, you've got the very legitimate, I think, celeb stan culture that has never happened in college football to this degree, right? We have, as we've said on this show, this is the most independently famous person to ever coach a college football team. Probably that ever will coach a college football team, unless some AD gets very dumb and tries to replicate this in a couple months, which my professional opinion is that you should not do that. But anyway, so there's that.
It's coming. Oh, yeah.
So there's that. What I think really is uncharted territory is that celeb culture, stan nature to the support. Like, I am under like no pretense that a lot of the attention here, as far as in air quotes, people rooting, fans of Colorado, people who are currently rooting for Colorado, those are fans of Deion Sanders. Similarly to a lot of the new Lakers fans in the last two or three years are fans of LeBron James. That's kind of the same. A lot of the new Miami FC fans right now are Messi fans. I think that's a lot of how things work right now with celeb athletes, or in this case, a coach. There's that. But I think that we should not overlook with Deion the nature of Black college football fandom that this is going to promote, create, whatever. There is a very legitimate nature here of people, and if you're an HBCU fan person, if you're a Jackson State person, I completely and totally understand why you have a lot of beef with a lot of what's going on here. That is perfectly fair. And I completely and totally understand that, respect that, and validate that. And then there is another notion of, for as long as Deion's going to do this and do this successfully, he's going to have a significant amount of support from Black America because he is a Black man doing this, and because he is this specific and particular Black man doing this. And if they are the team of Black America, at least for the moment, I think you've got that situation you had with USC when it was hot, with Miami when it was hot, with UNLV to an extent when it was hot in the 90s, in different ways, in varying degrees, but kind of same through line that runs through all of it.
Yeah, and I think those are accurate comparisons to make, but they also probably deny the idea of this being an original occurrence. I think this is an occurrence that hasn't happened in a long time. And I think because college football operates on a multitude of cycles, both like micro cycles, and it can be on the field in terms of scheme, but also cultural cycles, political cycles. It's been a while since you had Black identity that was unapologetic and simultaneously successful. I think that's what's going on. Yes. The idea that he is going to change Black coaching, I think, is a gross error. I think Deion is one of one, and I think Deion's interest is one of one. I think you can ask people at Jackson State that. I have a rule. I have a rule that I follow. And that is when, and let me separate this right up front. The celebration of Black culture thing, like, actually, let me back up once further. It was just really funny to me see a bunch of white people on Saturday be like, oh, that's Google. That's Key Glock. That's, I love that shit. Was hilarious because I was like, and my, was it Kesnich on the sideline talking like Offset? I'll give you offset because like Migos show up in commercials and shit. Like I get that. All right. And Atlanta is fairly overexposed to white America when it comes to rap. Don't act like you knew who the fuck Key Glock was until you Googled that shit the other night. And then you wanted to look cool and you put it on your social media. Be honest. All right. The only way my white ass in Nashville knows that is because his cousin is Young Dolph and he was killed in Memphis. That's the truth. Most white people don't know that. And most white people who aren't from the South definitely didn't know that.
Sorry. To a lot of this audience.
All right. Hang on. That was an aside. Anyway, I'm sorry. When everyone was like, that's Key Glock, I'm like, oh God, this is how we look. Anyway, you don't have to belong to everything. Just let it scroll past.
Let
you.
Us have this one to that extent.
Here's my situation. Well, just shut the fuck up. Okay. Anyway, although this is how I got to start listening to G Herbo, was doing embeds and being in locker rooms, and my white ass came home and I have like 3 G Herbo albums now. Anyway, here's my rule. In the coaching community amongst Black coaches, no one is talking about Deion changing anything. And so my rule, no joking aside, is when something is happening in Black America and I only see white liberals talking about it in a praiseworthy way or like, hey, this is important, but I don't see actual Black people talking about it, that should be like a whoop whoop. That should be a big alert for everyone to stand down. Okay. What we're going to get into some of the more fringe takes here, and then simultaneously, we're going to do a really difficult thing today. We're going to talk about what's real here. We're going to talk about what's important and what's affecting both like temporary and permanent change in college football and Deion. And then we're also going to have to take apart some of the just hands down the dumbest sports journalism I've seen in my career that's happened in the last 3 weeks. Okay. Including from some people I really like. There is not going to be a change in Black coaching in America for the same reason that this is how Deion became such a surprise. Richard, I want to take the conversation in one direction real fast because this summer and the spring, I do the anonymous thing. We talk to a lot of coaches all the time. I talk to a lot of coaches, and you and I have over the years as colleagues talked about racial code switching and just different things. You cannot separate race from celebrity here. and you cannot separate Deion from what's happening here. And that's hard because everybody wants to make this a case study on either black coaching or this or it's ex-NFL. No, it's Deion Sanders. It's one of one. So what I would advise everybody to do moving forward is to treat it as one of one. It is not about black coaching. This is not going to change anything for black coaches. Okay. However, this summer, I think it was obvious that there was a heavy amount of criticism for what how he was conducting himself was the biggest concern. This is what I want to get at. You cannot argue the fact that it is an overwhelmingly white industry that has done everything to maintain its whiteness in terms of authority and control, right? Over 50% of this sport has been played by black men for 30 to 40 years now.
A plurality.
Even when it's
a plurality.
Right. Yeah. And also that's a deceptive number because when you look at starters and you look at five stars, the
and
number
when you
jumps
look at one
way
position
up
versus the like, other 10.
Well, I'm just like, I'll take it further since I'm talking to my people here. We're playing a lot of D2 ball here. Cheers, boys. That's fine. But there, you cannot escape the fact that his immediate introduction and appearance into the head coaching world at the FBS Power 5 level pissed a lot of people off. And I think that was disseminated into what I took as a reporter, what a lot of people took as a journalist saying, he can't do this. This won't happen. I am very mad at myself, not because of Deion, but because I should have seen, well, I saw Mel Tucker do a portal switch at Michigan State. I have literally been to Kent State and seen Sean Lewis's offense in action back when nobody thought it was worthwhile, which is, and I'll get to like what we judge as worthwhile in this sport based off television ratings in a little bit, because that's actually where I'm angry. I'm not angry about Deion. I'm a Falcons fan, for Christ's sakes. This should have been more evident. It should have been more evident. But I don't base my offseason opinions on what I see because I'm an idiot. I never played this sport. I don't coach this sport. I base 100% of the things that I tell y'all here and on the Patreon, patreon.com/SCD. All of that stuff comes from me going to people smarter than me in the industry and saying, what do you think about this? Or what should I think about this? Or why? And overwhelmingly, boys, in a consensus, it was he's gonna be humbled. So I want you to hold that thought if you're listening or watching this. What does humbled sound like? He's going to be brought down to earth. What does brought down to earth sound like? There was code inside of this the entire time. This wasn't... The problem is when we get into one of one, there's no comp for this. I can't say what if this was white coach because there is no like... There is no comparison. It's Deion. And that makes it hard to pull one element out of this, race or celebrity. Does that make sense, Alex?
It does make a lot of sense. One thing that complicates this is that all of the code that you're talking about, and for all of the impossibility of unlinking Deion from racist dynamics in coaching and in the coverage of the sport, is that Deion's done some dirt in his life and in this shop. Like Deion, in addition to his extremely scammy charter school that hurt people, was a
lawsuits are still pending on that, by the way.
Was
like from the state of Texas.
In addition to that, he was a true asshole to Colorado's existing players in a way that you don't have to get down with.
Wait,
there's a case.
I'm not going to try.
There's a case that it was just very honest. It was just very honest. But nobody has to pretend that was a great, nice way to treat a bad football team full of probably fine college students. Like, so he's done some dirt, not only in his life, but in this job.
I feel weird on that one.
I totally understand the case that he was just doing the more honest version of what every coach does. And there is very much something to that. It doesn't mean it wasn't a dick move.
Yeah.
Then we're just talking about, you know, our coaches as a class, including him. Should they be penalized for acting this way? So I just want to say that it is tricky because racists are going to commentate in a racist fashion about this man and this team, but also any of us are.
Here's why I don't want to use racists as a descriptor, because everybody listening to this dismisses themselves from that term. Everybody. Here's what's more important. Is that stuff that's underneath your preconceptions. It's that stuff that you take as context that might actually be bias. So you're not wrong by saying it, Alex. I just am trying to slip something. I'm trying to slip medicine in with sugar here, okay? So if you're listening to this, and this is why I'm trying to paint you a picture about what it's like for me to make these phone calls to these people. And I'm not saying that some of the individuals that I talked to about Deion or about Colorado were, I'm not saying like, hey guy, you're actually racist because you don't like Deion. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is when you get into a referendum on this guy, since he dumped water or champagne on Tim McCarver 30 years ago, look it up on YouTube.
Oh, that was great.
He has polarized. Oh, so fantastic. Go Braves. He has polarized in a way that made it impossible for his critics not to implore just elements of race in their criticism of him. Now, Alex, you're right. The man screwed up a lot. The man has also done a lot of self-serving and self-promoting things. He's still doing it. I find it hard to think that you're only focused on molding young minds and creating the leaders of tomorrow when you have a fucking reality show in one-on-one player meetings. That's just not true. It's just not true. However, you have to acknowledge the things that he's done in this point. And the one, like, I guess the one regret I have is I try and stop and throw things out when I can smell bias. And this idea that you couldn't portal 84 kids, find a really good offensive coordinator, go out as a knowledgeable, what arguably one of the best pure corners who's ever played football, right? And understand what those positions require, both wide receiver, all skill positions. Let's just say all of them. And sometimes I throw corner in as a skill position, but that's a conversation for maybe the offseason. He knows what he's doing in that regard. We thought he would fail because I was told by people in the coaching industry who did not want to see this industry change and who still always have to let us know how smart they are. This goes back to like the Mel Tucker thing and everything else that's gone on, or any coach. The illusion is I'm being paid $9 million because I'm a wizard. And if you do it differently than me, that might affect the perception of how I do it and my $7-5 million a year. We should have sniffed this out earlier. That's my biggest regret on Deion. The fair criticism as we get into what's happened in the season, I probably take the other side on. But you cannot concede a conversation about Deion, or you cannot have a conversation with Deion about conceding that race kind of wraps up into it. And unapologetically black is different than black.
Now, again, you know, I don't want to, and sort of like I said a couple minutes ago, I don't want to overlook the very legitimate gripes that some black people are going to have with this. Some of it is jealousy. I think that's pretty clear. I think some of it's jealousy from black coaches. I think some of it's jealousy from white coaches, obviously. But there is going to be that notion here on the other end of you can't separate Deion from his blackness, in that I think some people do separate Deion from his blackness. Again, you cannot, and I have said multiple times, you cannot transcend race. That is not a thing that you can do. But you can come pretty close. And it, maybe for some people, he's come pretty close. And I think there is a notion from some folks that the fact that Deion only represents Deion means he's not for us, or means he doesn't care about us, and I personally don't agree all the way with that notion, to be clear, but I do get it and understand it and acknowledge it. I give it credence and I understand where those people are coming from. Because if you are at insert HBCU, Jackson State, for this purpose, you have seen versions of this movie before. If you are Eddie George at Tennessee State, we talk about that dynamic, a separately, not as independently famous, but independently famous and successful in football as well, person who did a similar thing as Deion Sanders. I get how you're on that side of the ledger. But I also think that like it's, there are so many ways onto the interstate here that just encapsulate so much stuff. Like there is so much stuff going on with this guy at this school in this moment that it's like, it is dizzying. I think in a lot of ways, to try to parse it all, which I know that we're doing probably poorly, but like there's a lot, man. There's just a lot. Like, dude, I was supposed to go to Florida State Clemson on Saturday, and I'm going to Oregon, Colorado.
At the behest of Sports Illustrated.
Yeah. Like,
I just want to insert this real fast, and then because I know we have a lot to talk about. the HBCU thing, I swear we might just have to park that conversation, because the idea that Dion, like any one human being who's suddenly tasked with fixing HBCU, that's Atlas. Like you will break. Like, because like I just want to shout out, you mentioned Eddie George and Tennessee State, which is like basically backs up against my neighborhood here. Two things real fast. 37209 is the most violent zip code in America in the last census. Sorry, 37208, which was the zip code where TSU is. That's the first thing. Second thing, a report just came out this week from the federal government audited HBCUs. The state of Tennessee has underfunded TSU, where Eddie George is at, in one of the most thriving and business vibrant cities in America, one of the most growing cities in America. Underfunded by 2.1, ready for this? Billion dollars with a B. So the idea that Dion was supposed to fix HBCU, I just want to be 110% clear. Nobody, no one person is fixing HBCU without a shitload of what's the term where you bring it to light? They used it in South Africa. Like there's a lot of conversations that have to happen before we even get to HBCU.
Agreed. I would just point out, and then I'm gonna move us, that Dion chose to wrap himself in that. And
he's a celebrity.
Make that part of his brand. No, but I'm just like,
yeah.
When Dion got to Jackson State, he paid quite a bit of press conference words.
Okay, but Alex.
I'm here to lift up the enterprise. I just want to say, and okay, so I understand eyes. If that he is also part of the anger.
Close your eyes and think of the whitest living college football coach in the world. You're thinking about Tommy Tuberville. When Tommy Tuberville,
I was going to say Brian Kelly, but okay.
When Tommy Tuberville was on the as hot as he'd ever been in his career, he resurrected a underfunded, poorly managed program in Mississippi. And when reports came out that he was going to Auburn, he wrapped himself in the culture. He wrapped himself in being, no, we're the defiant little Mississippi school. We can do this. There's good football players here. And he told reporters, the only way I'm leaving Oxford, Mississippi is in a pine box. So pine box was a jab at Tommy Tuberville for years. So I would just point out, Dion wrapped himself in HBCU. If I got a job at Jackson State, do you know what I would do? I would wrap myself in HBCU.
By the way,
a little odd. Okay. These lights really kind of fade me out. But like, that's what coaches do.
Did that. You can quibble with how he left, when he left, why he left, what have you, but he did achieve that goal and do that job. If it was for a short time, yep.
Yeah.
If it was for not as long as you wanted to, yep. If it was not by the means that maybe you wanted to see it done, yep. But he did achieve that goal for however long he was there.
Very fair. I am interested in spinning forward to different parties that seem to not know entirely how to act or how to stay calm while this is happening. I think you guys might want to talk about the media. Can I do a quick thing about the general public, about the internet?
Yeah.
Because we get a media that I think reflects our society. You know, we the fourth estate, I can't believe I just used that term, work for you, the Wait, public.
You really? Oh, you? Oh, ideally you like, right. Ideally, so, you believe that, right? You don't think that's actually happening, though, right?
I do not think that actually happens, but I think that sometimes the two can mirror each other.
Our media is butt right now.
On a very basic level, I think that Dion has either brought in new fans to college football, whether they stick around or not is another matter, or awoken dormant fans who I just don't think are really equipped to handle someone of his stature being.
Both are happening. This is the most. Both and situation you're going to get maybe ever. It's every question you ask me, both and.
This is the expansive demo that I strongly suspect, though I can't prove it, was responsible for this mess, which Dion, to his credit, very forcefully told people to cut it out. But this mess about the Colorado State safety, who did lay what I believe was a chicken shit hit on Travis Hunter that injured him in that game. But there's a lot of dirty hits in college football. And I was a little skeptical when I saw Joe Parker, Colorado State's athletic director, going to Pete Thamel of ESPN and talking about death threats, because I am hardwired at this point when college football people talk about death threats to be, oh, okay, let me see where those are. Nope, not hard to find if you go to the young man's Instagram. A lot of people, and this is where the celebrity stan culture has finally arrived in college football, have really, like, and I don't even think this is Deion's fault. I just think this is what happens with celebrities in society, and now we have one in college football, just like do not know how to comport themselves, probably in any environment, but especially in this one. And it's different. It's different too. It's different. I'll say the one thing, it's different. You know, this is not the first time that a college athlete has gotten abuse on the internet or heaven knows right. in person. What is interesting to me about this one is that usually, and there's no excuse for this either, it's okay, a star athlete gets abuse from the student section or from fans of a team because he
right.
dropped a commitment to a school or because he was really good, like JJ Redick at Duke. And
I mean, hell, that happened. Maryland students, that happened to Travis yeah. Hunter week one at TCU.
Yes. What happened here is a little different, which is that an army of people on the internet just seem to have decided that they need to carry out like digital vigilante justice.
There, yes,
for Deion.
There's a pro Deion. There's a pro Deion contingent. Yeah,
that is, and it goes weird.
It goes beyond what you would assume to be a young person on social media. The thing that, to go back to the race part of this for a second, what I started to notice this in August. There is a vocal, angry quotient that who were defending Deion from the outset before we played football. Again, because I do think, Alex, it is a celebrity culture. I also do think there's a level of identification that like, I'll be honest with you. I'm going to be really honest with you. Anytime, like, we clipped one of the preseason takes that, like, I was mainly in the clip. We clipped one of these things for social media. So it was on like all of like TikTok and stuff. I got like a series of really angry comments, all from black males, all who are somehow connected to the sport in like a youth football or 7-on-7 thing. And all of whom then morphed in the second evolution of this happened after, like, I think it was between week one. No, it was between week two and week three. I'm now seeing that same contingency of people start talking about, like, it was the Shador quote about the difference between FCS and FBS, or how there is no difference unless it's a defensive line rush. And then there's a lot of harassment now of, oh, you're just a sports writer. And it's coming from black men who played the game. And there's an empowerment there and an anger there that look, here's the deal. I'm not going to respond to that one because secretly I agree with them. And I think most members of the sports media should be like eating to survive in a zombie apocalypse. Like, I'm not Mr. Journalism or Mr. Sports Media here, but it's worth noticing that there's a certain energy here.
Those guys believe that Deion Sanders represents them. Whether
yes, right, absolutely. Whether right, wrong, or different. It's an identity. Yes.
There
yes.
is an identity in if you yep. are, again, this is what I talk about. There are way more inroads into this than you realize. Yeah. If you are a youth football coach or a 7-on-7 football coach that is black, you can see yourself in Deion yes. Sanders. I have spoken to Deion Sanders about this. He has told me, as far as what the line of questioning that I was talking to Deion about was like, oh, you know, what are the experiences that you think prepare yourself for this stage? Right. We were having a conversation, and I sort of phrased the Jackson State stuff as sort of a good kind of launching point for his career in a sense. And he pushed back on that and said, no, everything I've done, whether it was in the media, whether it was playing, whether it was being a youth coach, he specifically said to me, being a youth coach. So there is an identity in there. Again, this is what I'm saying. The broken contained thing is a joke. It's a bit that we kind of do here, but you have to understand how big a deal this thing is. And I think we've always had, if we talk about, you know, stan culture, whatever, we've always had stan culture of people who support a certain school. I mean, whatever. There's always been a very...
Hey, 70% of the Georgia alumni look like Kirby Smart. No, I mean literally, like, dress and have the same fucking haircut. So, like, this is not a phenomenon limited to race.
But I think it's...
At all.
But I think there is a very specific thing here that makes it just completely, it's this guy. It's Deion Sanders,
Richard,
man.
So the old chain of things, the old Bagman way of things, pre-NIL, this person existed the entire time. This person was relegated and used as a cog in a machine the entire time. What I'm talking about specifically is you would have a black position coach, or black position coach or an assistant, your head recruiter would go into the black community, and he would be tasked with fostering the relationship with this guy that we're talking about, who is assembling the 7-on-7s, doing the shit out of the back of his car. That guy never saw himself any further up the chain than the next black man he had to deliver to. Mm-hmm. And so Deion taps into something that AAU basketball coaches have seen, but we haven't seen this in football yet. And that's why they're suddenly awake and they are letting out it. Look, man, I'm going to be really honest with you. Again, I don't give a shit that I get harassed on Twitter, because I get harassed by the entire spectrum of humanity. That's social media. So I don't want anyone to think this is a personal thing. What I've noticed is these people feel represented for the first time, and these people feel angry. And look, I'm going to throw one NFL thing out. Please hang with me, Alex. It's really hard to tell these people to calm down. It's really hard to tell these people, hey, he's going to lose some games soon, and I don't know if he's a national title winning head coach, when like Jeff Saturday happens. When Jeff Saturday happens and you're in the, and you are a 7-on-7 coach in the black community, and you don't have any formal training, because when you look at how formal training works for black assistants, you see more dead ends than you see glass doors, right? So it's hard to say, I'm not going to argue with some, well, you shouldn't argue with anybody on social, guys, but like there's a lot of steam being let off. And it's being personified by this guy. And it's hard for me, because I have no identity to it, to not roll my eyes. But look, I've seen myself represented in anything I've ever wanted to do in America. If someone says something bad about the National, I get upset. Now, why is that? Because there you go.
I think that the fact of that, I think, is something that cannot be overlooked and overstated. And again, you know, it's just... it's another inroad to this thing. And yes, Alex, your point is well taken, that Deion and Travis did a stream where he was like, I've moved on. He's going to be out for a couple of weeks. But like, yeah, man, that got weird, and it's going to continue to get weird. And I think the specific nature and tenor of how these three games have gone, the way that they've won them, how they've won them. And the fact that you drop this into this part of the season, right? This is the part of the season. This is the part of the season where we'd be in another year having a conversation where we were probably making fun of the September Heisman as a concept, or we were sitting here saying, well, I don't know if Georgia and Michigan are that good. Georgia and Michigan have played virtual high school teams. Sorry, South Carolina. Yada, yada, yada. I don't know who's good. Blah, 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 blah. But you've got something legitimate that you can deeply sink your teeth in, because I don't think these three wins, like these three wins have not, I don't want to say aren't flukes, but I don't want to say are flukes. Like, they're not flukes. They smoked TCU's defense. They smoked TCU's defense. Like, they beat Nebraska by battling by a first half, and then figured out a way in the second half and boat raced. And then there is Saturday night, which, look, you can quibble about how Jay Norvell managed the game. I do. But, like, they won the game. And so they're sitting here 3-0 when I don't think any of us thought they were going to be 3-0. And so there is the amount, like, this is, they're not going to lose 9 games straight. But, like, this is the proof of concept that he needs. Like, if they didn't get any other shred of proof of concept, like, this is it, I think, that you need to prove for a medium or long term, however long he's there, however long he does this, that it's working. Because recruiting is marketing, sales, and hospitality. Scouting is a different thing that obviously plays into recruiting and is how you get players. But the recruiting, or the marketing, sales, and hospitality element, that check and check, that's about as at a high level as you can fathom at this point in time with what they've done in these three games.
I would, okay, So this is the transition point here where we get into maybe if there is an internal disagreement on this show. You talk about what would we be doing in September. Those are concerns of the media, not the fans. Those are concerns of the television industry, not the fans, not the sport. I want to separate everything moving forward that I'm no longer talking about football. In a football sense, I think I'm looking at an 8-4 team that has taken essence of heavy portaling on a blind item resume would look something like a high performing Pac-12 team in another year with like a really, like maybe it's Cam Ward and maybe it looks like Washington State on off. I'm talking about a blind item.
Sure.
Like you just stripped the name and looked at either advanced stats or just your plain old box score. So to that end, obviously the media is overplaying the shit out of this football team, but we know why. We're not going to play dumb on that. Okay. I would like to point out for the future, teams like this have existed for years. Just because you did get my friend Key Glock on the sideline and all this kind of stuff, like y'all should have been paying attention to this for a long time. I mean, because there's entertaining football like that.
Michigan State went to the Rose Bowl.
It's been around for a long time.
Michigan State went to the Rose Bowl with Rich Homie Quan. Like Florida had Kodak Black on the sideline.
That, yes, like this is not again. Nothing has been unique except the way that the except the way the elements have been combined.
And there's a volume there you cannot ignore. There's a volume here of Kawhi Leonard was there, like Offset was there, Key Glock was like there, The Rock was in the locker room. All right, I'm not gonna sit here and tell you that there's not a volume.
Here's my white admission, guys. Here. They would go like Kyrie is here. Was it Kyrie and Kawhi?
I think so.
Because I'm gonna fuck up my own joke here. It was two basketball players, it was two NBA players that start with the letter K, right? And I was like, there's one in the box and the one on the sideline. Mm. And I kept going, is that the flat earther? Is that the flat earther? And it wasn't. That's Kyrie Irving. Sorry. That was there's my whiteness.
Among other things, Kyrie. Yeah.
My issue, my sort of, Richard, can you name the last time that you have talked about television ratings in a regular season football game?
Oh, in a regular season football game? No. But like,
I mean, we don't care about television.
No, you.
Oh, but we suddenly do in the national
exactly,
media.
But, right.
Because
Godfrey,
we've been told to. You
Godfrey,
we've been told to.
Hold on, Godfrey.
I knew we'd find a disagreement.
You cannot sit here and say it is not remarkable that this is the fifth most watched. The Colorado State game was the fifth most watched game on record from ESPN. That at 11 p.m., at 2 a.m., when this game ended, there were as many people watching that game as there were watching like Alabama, Texas. Like you cannot sit here and say that is not remarkable, that is not important, that does not say something. Whether it lasts.
I didn't say it was remarkable or wasn't remarkable. Dan Wetzel, who I have tremendous respect for in an industry where I don't respect a lot of people. I mean, since Death of the BCS, I always thought he had a conscience, like a sort of the Jiminy Cricket of the sport from the college football media side. And he's written that Deion's a national title winner after three games and all this other kind of stuff. But he and I had a back and forth where I just had to point out, like, we all got done writing epitaphs and bemoaning the fact that television is such a driver and an influence in this. That, and then we're turning around we're operating on television ratings as our North Star now. And you can't argue that because the volume of content that's being created. And so we've let television drive the ship financially always, or since Oklahoma versus Board of Regents. And now now television is telling us this is the direction we're heading. We never gave a shit, even up till last year, on television ratings for individual games. No one sat around and talked about this a week later.
But then
you couldn't even find them.
But then Deion Sanders happened. That's why I don't get why you're not applying everything you just said about how rare, unique, and wild this situation is to this thing. Like, if you don't want to talk about television TV ratings for the other 1,000 games that happened this season, all right. But like Deion Sanders coaching in a game against Colorado State that was ESPN's fifth most watched college football game on record.
Right.
It like here, that is an insane.
Yeah. Keep going.
Way
keep going.
To
and then here's what happens. Here's what happens. Then you talk about how it was achieved. You talk about the way Deion achieved it. You talk about how it's much more than the actual college football game. And then you know what happens when you do that? You're harangued and told you're not covering Deion the right way, or then the Deion stand comes after you, or you suddenly risk this sort of overexposure thing. It's a cycle that's being perpetuated. I've had people say, you don't really believe this is all a work, do you? But which is a pro wrestling term. And I laughingly say, kind of not, but the idea that you can't call it a circus is absurd. And it is a circus. It's not college football at this point. It's something bigger, because I think the three of us all believe, and I think most people in the industry all believe, this won't sustain. It's an incredibly small sample set. And the idea of justifying it because it was September, those are media problems. Those are TV problems. I said this on the single wing this week. This is the only we've gotten to this thing with sports that we do with television, where it's like, you don't, if you stopped a movie every 15 minutes and then decided whether or not it was a good movie, that would be insane. And we've started to do that with college football. We started to do that with sports.
Alex, go ahead, because I will come back to that in a second, but go ahead, Alex.
I also think that something is happening where the college sports media loves a big deal. And
I think they need to justify their existence.
We've all sort of been conditioned in the last few years to be really attuned to financial bottom lines and talking about the sport. And I think that there is a desire to describe the Deion phenomenon at Colorado in a way that somehow untethers it from gravity and from the realities of the sport. I think that is how you get commentary. I read something from Dennis Dodd, who we also respect, from CBS, who has said a couple times this week that if Deion were at Colorado a year earlier, the Pac-12 wouldn't have died. No. It's not true. That's just not true. George Kliavkov might have thought it would be true and might have indicated, and he did indicate in public at the time, when Deion took this job, that, oh yeah, this is going to raise our value. But at the end of the day, like, Deion doesn't change that there's business incompetence run rampant around this sport. Deion didn't get Jackson State an invite to the SEC. Deion is not going to win a national championship at Colorado. What Deion has done is incredible, but like, you want to know why Deion's not going to win a national title at Colorado? Because if this keeps up for another year or two, Deion's going to insert blue blood job. It's going to happen. I think that it has become easy to forget that this is still college football. And that while I think what Deion has done is without parallel in many ways, it's not even the first time that Colorado football has been the center of national attention because of a singular force of personality coach. Deion and Bill McCartney have some pretty serious differences, but also if you listen to Dead Letters.
I had such a good Dan Hawkins joke, but that's fine.
Yeah. So I just think that because the numbers are so big, Richard, because the television ratings are so like gaga, and because the sports business element of this is so incredibly robust in every way for Deion at Colorado, some folks have forgotten that this is college football. Great coaches who do really well at Colorado get a chance to go to another job. When conferences fall apart, they fall apart because television executives do not make decisions based on who is coaching for one team for 1 year or even 2 years or 3 years. And I just think we would be well served to remember that this is still college football.
I just want us to go back to making television executives work for us as the people and not the other way around. That's what I want. And in the media, we've done a terrible, terrible job. Here's the truth to piggyback, Alex. It's not, Richard, that I'm not recognizing the phenomenon and I'm not angry about the coverage. The pregame shows are terrible because I'm 42. That's the real answer. The sound of the music sounds like shit to me because it sounded different years ago and I got old, and that's okay. I don't need Pat McAfee, but I also don't personally, like, I knew Pat in the wrestling days. Like, it's nothing against him. It's just not my shit. I would so much rather drink coffee in silence, read, and then start the 11 a.m. games. I joke on Twitter every week, I want a 10 a.m. game Central Time. Please give me a 10 a.m. game. I'm in bed at 9, not on Saturdays. I am upset about the media's dumb jumps here because we have been busted and broken down since I've been a professional. And I think like, okay, is David Ubben, our buddy at The Athletic, is he on the Deion beat? Is he like just Deion beat right now?
basically. David is covering a lot of Deion right now. Okay. Yeah.
Here's what makes me sad about that. I don't know how long it's going to last, and I'm glad he's doing it because it's like we're grasping at something here because there's no confidence in the media to stand up and have an original thought about this other than to recognize the press release that were sent, because for 20 years, the media has been downsizing, has been riddled with layoffs. We don't have an advertising model that actually reflects it. Nobody can get paid the right way. And so we chase this stuff. Television ratings, people like that. We should make more content about it. That's what's gone on in our brains for 20 years. And that's not how media, and you can ask people older than me, that's not how it operated for 30 or 40 years. The ability, I know we're going to talk about the USC thing and the credentialing. Arizona State had that issue last week about like browbeating people and making them lie about a quarterback not practicing. We don't have a spine anymore in the media. We are running to reflect what we are being told to do, and no one is doing anything original. Now, to go back to like, if you want a Deion beat writer right now, I think that's a good idea because it might be one less person that the Times is going to lay off in a year. Okay. So by God, by all means, if it means David or somebody else gets to keep a job, do it. But I also know that David Ubbin's a really talented writer and a really smart dude. So like, how much of this are we running to, and how much of this actually merits what we're doing? The output that we're putting out. I don't know. I'm a little scared. This also feels really dumb in NFL, Richard. I have been mad for as long as I could recognize media trends in the NFL that it's an AFC and NFC East league. That's it. My team and your team can go 14-2 or 14-3 now, and they won't get as much coverage as a bad Cowboys team or a horrific Jets team. And that's where we're headed. And I'm fucking terrified. Listen to me now, not you two, the rest of you. I'm fucking terrified that by no other choice than raw fucking capitalism and the craven consolidation of media rights, we are headed to a dumber, smaller echo chamber in college sports. That's not Deion Sanders' fault. That's not Colorado's fault. But this is yet another example of how it's getting smaller, dumber, and worse.
And I hope you've enjoyed this last hour, Richard. I'm just making a point. I hope you've enjoyed this last hour of us talking about one school as well.
That's the irony.
I think you guys are so totally missing it with this. Like, I think you guys are dropping this. I think you guys are treating this thing for not what it is. I think you are treating this thing as college. Like you both just said, you are treating this thing as college football. I'm not treating it as college football. I am treating this thing as Deion Sanders. And I think
as media, as entertainment content.
But what I'm saying is you have to take it out of the box of more or less everything you know about college football media. I mean, it's this guy, like this is, and I'm not saying it's going to continue to be for the rest of the season or even for the next couple of weeks. This is right now the biggest sports story in the country. It is. There's no other way to swing it. It may not be in 3 weeks, but it is right now. And so when you've got not just moth to a flame, when you've got moth to a wildfire blazing inferno engulfing the entire west coast of the country right now, you're going to get a lot. And you're getting a lot.
I guess I don't disagree with you, but I also don't give a shit. And I never have. And that's why I'm here. And that's why I make a show about UTSA and Army. And that's like, and I'm not being too cool. I'm just telling you that like this, we're again, it's not Deion. It could be anybody. Okay.
I don't think it can be anybody. I don't think it can be anybody.
Well,
because nobody, nobody.
PJ Fleck becomes a supervillain or something. But like what I'm saying is I don't, when it reaches this, look guys, I get tired of Georgia. Because they win two national titles and they're boring. Like I understand how far in the minority I am on this, and that's okay. But I'm also not going to stop saying this is reductive. This is probably not good. Also, I've never been wrong about the state of where this sport's headed. I've never been wrong. And people who are holding this up as a fix or a salve, they're out of their fucking minds. So you and I agree. It's not college football. But our response to that and our opinion is vastly different. I don't work in the mainstream media in as much as I have to give a shit about that. Because if I had a job where they said, I want you to talk about Alabama and the Cowboys every week, I'd get another job. That's the difference.
I do think the I do think all of this is refreshing in its newness. And I think in its newness, it has to be covered as something new. And it is, to some extent, as we've previously stated, it's not. But that's sort of a different discussion that we've already had. Like, that's where I land on it. And I think that is where we both differ.
I want to pause to tell you about an important bit of podcast business and a place where, if you're a Colorado fan listening to this, a new one, an old one, a Dion-specific one, anybody, you can get great Colorado Buffaloes merchandise or great merchandise for over 100 other schools that play college football. Of course, that is Home Field Apparel. If you go to homefieldapparel.com and you use the promo code SCD20, you will get 20% off your first order at the finest retailer of officially licensed vintage collegiate sports apparel in the world. They are wonderful friends of ours. They are also currently just getting like slammed with orders. So home field has sort of gone to the moon. They are working around the clock practically rapidly to get all these orders out the door. But when you get your home field order, which I know a lot of you've been placing, I promise you that it will be extremely worth the minor wait. They're the best. They're the best in the business.
Alex, when you're the best in the business,
when you're the best in the business, you grow fast. I am in home field right now. This is my Big Sky hoodie. Richard appears to be in home field right now. It's a wear one for the team. Long sleeve tee.
We got to get the gobblers. We got to get the gobblers off the schneid. Also, I've never done a home field long sleeve tee. You have the sweatshirts and the short sleeve tees. This is amazing. You can see the little home field emblem there. But as someone who wears black all the time, unless I'm wearing home field, this is perfect. I love it. Also, come on, Tech. Let's go. Come on,
Steven,
boys.
When am I getting my hoodie back? My home field hoodie.
It's not a hoodie. It's a crew neck. And the answer is no.
All right. That was a crew neck. I do have a home field hoodie as well. I've got all kinds of things. That's SCD20 for 20% off your first order at home field. Also, just want to quickly note that if you like this podcast, if you want to support this podcast, if you want to get hours more of this podcast every month, the place to do that is via our Patreon page at patreon.com/SZD. That continues to be a critical thing that we do, and we think it's a tremendous deal for you as well, as little as $5 a month to get a lot of college football podcasts.
A lot.
Richard, what time is it?
Oh, you know what time it is, baby. We gonna taste it!
How did I let this happen? I named the segment
We're workshopping.
2 years ago, and now, wow.
Welcome again, new Dion listeners. This is the tasting menu where we go through a lot of games, the games that we find most interesting. No, we're not going to do every one of them in what we call the Split Zone Duo tasting menu for the weekend ahead. All game times are central. That's God's time. The TV networks are very easily found, and I don't think anyone is listening to us and then remembering what channel the game is on. So go find the TV channels. Recommend lsufootball.net or fbschedules.com. Or just your YouTube TV or your cable provider will show you exactly what channel these games are on. Thursday night.
Charter right now? Jesus.
On Thursday night.
What did he say?
I just said that if we read off all the TV channels that these games are on, no one's going to remember by the time they're actually channel surfing. So let's just say, don't do that.
Who gives a shit? Yeah. No one looks at that anyway, because you just look at the icon now on like YouTube TV. It's pointless.
Thursday night. Georgia State at Coastal Carolina. So this one, interesting to me, because you will remember on the Sun Belt preview before the season, I talked at length about how I think Sean Elliott...
We were real fucking wrong.
Were we? Let's see about that. I talked at length about how Sean Elliott and the Georgia State coaching staff look very fireable coming into this year, because they have been stuck in the middle class of this league while so many programs, five, six different programs, have had ascendant turns at the top of this league. And Georgia State, which is in Atlanta, which is a big advantage, not everything, but an advantage, and has a nice stadium there, has not capitalized on it.
Right.
Yeah. They are 3-0. And I was asked by someone on Twitter, or told, you know, people are saying that you might have to offer a mea culpa to Sean Elliott about this. Let's see about that. I'm not doing that yet. They have beaten Rhode Island, an FCS team, in a squeaker. They have gotten past UConn and Charlotte more comfortably. UConn appears to be back to being one of the worst teams in FBS. Charlotte has been one of the worst teams in FBS. Rhode Island's
FCS. I told
you
so. Jim Mora sucks.
Let's just see. This game against Coastal on the road will be an indicator of whether or not Georgia State is actually figuring things out.
a lot of fear, a lot of like, oh wow, going on in reaction to Georgia State amongst other Sun Belt coaches. So I will leave it at that.
You're telling me that people are worried about them.
Good quarterback. That's why I was like, oh, maybe I fucked up. Yeah. I don't know. So definitely worth tuning in to check it out, because like Coastal Carolina is still, coaching change aside, still Coastal Carolina. Like still one of those schools that you talked about above Georgia State. That's you want to get a good data point. You want to change things. Like, I can't overemphasize, this is not a bit or even a stand thing, how competitive this league is right now. And the expectation, there are too many high expectations at too many programs right now on these coaches. And like, so you're going to have some very disappointed ADs and fan bases at the end of the Sun Belt year, just because you can't fit all the expectations in here. This is one of those games that's going to start sorting people out.
I think you're going to find out here, I think, some of the how real Coastal is. I'm not saying they are or they aren't, but I think this is a,
yeah.
All right, if Georgia State's not very good, smoke them. You got a great quarterback, smoke them.
Yeah.
Friday night, Big Ten, Wisconsin at Purdue. Got some worries about everybody here, but yeah. I think Wisconsin's going to win the game.
Y'all had an interesting take on the hurry up about Wisconsin, because I obviously viewed last week more through a Georgia Southern lens. And then, I mean, the turnovers were the turnovers. Scani is like, it's like a dog. It's like making your dog play dress up because you ran out of dolls. Sorry, I have a 3-year-old. Like, it's like putting obviously poor fit skill position players in schematic situations that, like, they want to be 2024 Wisconsin now, and they haven't flushed their roster. I don't know if that's a fair
assessment. I think the starkest, like, for me, thing about that game was how the first half went, and then that drive. You know the one I'm talking about if you watch this game, when you were like, oh, there it is.
Yeah.
Like, when you were like, where the hell has that been for the last 35 minutes?
If Braylon Allen ripped off a big run. Maybe you're like, oh.
Yeah, maybe that's why Longo's doing it, because they do have the spurts where you're like, oh, it's new Scani, but then you see the personnel deficiencies on the next drive. It's going to be that type of year, boys. If you're a Wisconsin fan, like, you need to be happy with the glimpses of the future, and then, like, enjoy your Cheez-It Bowl or whatever. No, that's the Citrus Bowl. Never mind. Are they going to the Citrus Bowl?
Also Friday night. Boise State at San Diego State. My position on San Diego State is clear. It's over. It's done. Gonna need a new coach there sooner or later. Boise State. They need to be excited.
Apathy's gonna set in.
Apathy's gonna set in. It's not even his fault. It's just apathy's gonna set in. The style of football that they play.
It's what, like, he does.
The offense is still so bad, dude. Like, they need butts and seats. They just missed out on the Pac-12. They have the stadium.
I agree. It's not personal. Beautiful Snapdragon Stadium. No, what I was saying, Alex, was not that I was caping for him. I'm just saying I haven't heard that yet, but your assessment is completely accurate. Brady Hoke lulls you to sleep in terms of his 10 years. So why would you're in the lulling to sleep part.
Why would you go to a game when you could be doing it?
It does seem like a place culturally, like, and then you're in California too. Like, why wouldn't you get somebody who's just like, fuck it, 70. We don't even play defense.
You mean like,
we're at A11 this shit.
Right.
The Saturday early window. Dude.
It's San Diego,
Boise,
baby.
Saturday. Boise, we need. Boise, by the way.
You need to win this. You got to win
Boise
this.
Boise has not won an FBS game yet. Boise needs to put the foot down here and win the game.
I need to see functional complementary run pass with Boise's offense, please, immediately. Y'all got to get this shit up. Like, let's go.
Saturday early window. Auburn and A&M. I don't know what's going to happen here, to be honest with you. I got nothing on this one.
I got nothing. Yeah.
Oh, I've got one just to make Godfrey mad. Let's Godfrey's going to hate this, because Hugh Freeze did something really smart this week, and you're going to have to admit it when I explain what it was.
He does occasionally.
I saw this via Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer. Excellent.
Did he download
Auburn
Signal?
Journalist.
Was that the smart thing? Did he download Signal?
I mean, I don't know what he's doing with his encryptions and his devices, and we'll see if he's made progress. Hugh Freeze is working on expectations before this game. He was like, our recruiting has been shit under the last guy. He didn't say that verbatim, but it's true.
That is true.
And we're playing teams. It is true. Yeah. Brian Harsin did a horrendous job in this job, and we are playing teams with a lot of good players. Now, is Texas A&M actually a good team?
He did that at Houston Nut, too. He just knows that he's at Auburn, where they're so exhausted with the Alabama-Georgia era that he has to say it a little bit more often. So
he is managing expectations.
That's a sign of growth. at least in terms of being a football coach. I never said he wouldn't win at Auburn. I never said he wouldn't be successful.
Well, every Auburn coach except one, Brian Harsin, does.
I just said it was a crime against God that we let him do it again. Yeah. That's all I said.
So Florida State Clemson, a heavy hitting game that we have yet to mention on this. Actually, Richard mentioned it briefly. This is exciting. This is big time. This is what you want to see.
Richard, I have. What, Richard? Like, what? What the fuck? What the fuck? I watched that BC game. What the fuck?
Yeah.
Stop making me say things.
You know, the BC thing, I think, at the end there, yeah, you get a turnover, you return it for a touchdown. It's a closer game than you think. I think there's probably some look ahead in there from Florida State, to be fair. I think Florida State's going to win this game. I think it's going to be a close and good game because obvious talent. But, like, this is a situation. Like, Florida State has not beaten Clemson in way longer than you realize, by the way.
It's a monkey off your back
gotta
thing.
Gotta have it. Yeah. This is a gotta have it thing. I'm excited to see how Florida State kind of grows into this game over the course of it. If it's got a not fluky, wonky, dumb game script and things kind of stay relatively in kind of check here. Florida State, you know, look. Clemson, look. Offense, we know what it's going to be. This is a game where, and I think Alex kind of has this point here, you're going to have to find a way to generate. Somebody's got to make a play. Who do I trust in this game to make a play? I trust Keon Coleman and his friends more than I trust Will Shipley and what Clemson has at the skill positions.
Yeah.
The whites.
Clemson's offense has no explosivity to it at all this year. Yeah. On the other hand, though, what you saw, if the last time you checked in on Clemson was the Duke game, which it probably was, because why would you watch them against FAU or whichever FCS game they played?
Yo, they beat the fuck out of FAU.
Charleston Southern, I think it was. That Duke game is not likely to be representative of Clemson's offensive output with still a pretty well-recruited team and Garrett Riley calling the plays.
Clemson is not going to get to the 10-yard line three times and fumble again.
No.
Yes.
And they're not going to do that again.
I was told that what Duke secondary did is now like gospel on like other people playing Clemson.
Which is its own commentary on Clemson's wide receivers.
So the Duke tape. The Duke tape is the hottest mixtape of the Atlantic Coast fall. In terms of what they do in their secondary there, what Elko does is like this is highly popular. But no, like, well, I think, Alex, to your point, that was a turnover, individual circumstance sort of situation.
This is a matchup between one program whose line is clearly going up and one program whose line is clearly going down. And I think it's enticing to think that this will be the moment where the result flips. It might not be. Even though I think Florida State is now the better program and is going to win the ACC this year, you just don't know. It feels like a toss-up to me.
I was going to do a bit on the show this week about how this isn't even worth watching, and then Boston College happened, and now I'm like, I have no idea what, like,
you don't.
You're both unreliable.
There are some times when you get teams in moments that you think are going a certain way, and they have this just like stamp validation. Like 2019 LSU at Alabama. That was the stamp validation. Florida State had this about 10 years ago, the year they won the national championship, when they went to Clemson and fucking murdered them in Clemson from basically the first snap. Florida State has an opportunity to do that again.
Murder. Murder again, Tallahassee. Alex, get us out of here.
In New York, Army, Syracuse.
This is my Washington Post annoying college football hipster game of the week. Two things here that I just want to point out real fast. Garrett Schrader, the Syracuse quarterback, he's like low-key one of the most entertaining players in college football because he approaches the position of quarterback, especially without his wide receiver, like a cast member of Jackass in that, like, you're like, oh God, he fell on the pavement like that. That's basically how Garrett Schrader approaches that position. It's a blast to watch. It's kind of terrifying. And then on the other side of this, like, I watched all of the UTSA game. Army, can you just complete the screen passes? Richard, they throw like the same bubble screen on first down to spread everybody out before the run, and they keep dropping it. Like, oh my God, rep it. It's driving me nuts.
I went to a practice where they dropped it a lot too.
I
don't
really
know why Army can't win this game, by the way. I know they're like a 13-point underdog.
No,
in this
that's
game.
I didn't pick this to the hipster picks are not to be cute. It's that this will legit be like an interesting game. Because I do think Army's front seven is enough to give a physical reminder to Schrader. And when that happens, Syracuse's offense changes to something different.
Oklahoma, Cincinnati, Cincinnati's Big 12 opener in this game. All right, Oklahoma. Let's see
Cincinnati
it.
Cincinnati might be butt though.
Let's see it.
Look, dude, I think Cincinnati is not great.
Might be fast.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about them on the Patreon. I'll leave it. Yeah. Yeah.
Depreciating asset, possibly. The Pitt win doesn't look so hot. 21 seems like a lot to give up to Pitt, even though they won the game. And losing to Miami for the first time in a very, very long time.
Some of that,
I said this.
Some of that was a little when you go back and look through the box score. But yes, we don't want to be losing to Miami of Ohio if you're Cincinnati.
Wasn't good.
This game is not at good. Nippert. It will be a packed house, it will be a great college football atmosphere. Cincinnati could absolutely win it, but I also am getting the feeling like, I don't know, man, 11-1 is kind of sitting right there for Oklahoma.
Ooh.
Like for all the problems we've talked about, I told you this, and this isn't a new take either. I told you this on the Big 12 preview, the floor,
you chided me about Texas running the table.
The floor is really low for Oklahoma coming into this year. We said that, but the ceiling was still up there. If things worked, the defense, quietly
okay,
for Brent Venables, Richard, is not looking like an Oklahoma Sooners football defense right now. That I am monitoring.
Okay, I like it.
I think I think the fracking lobby got to Mr. Kirsch.
No, I'm serious. I think there's upside there, despite all of the stuff we've talked about with Oklahoma, how it looks like they're very misaligned. Clearly, they got an offensive coordinator who doesn't respect his coach or the athletic director, like whatever.
You think Oklahoma's going 11-1 just one more time?
I didn't say that. I said it's sitting there for them, and I really think it is. They're the second most talented team in the Big 12.
I almost said the SEC.
My head hurts.
I'm not saying I agree with him. I'm there yet. I do see kind of what he's getting at, especially with where the back end sitting of that schedule there. Gets. But there is a very key stretch there that involves Texas and Kansas, and I would like to see it before I'm ready.
I'm lost.
I'm just
also,
telling you, it's
also,
sitting
this
there.
Is K-State erasure. Like, I've learned the hard way. You never doubt a K-State team to go into an Oklahoma team with a susceptible defense.
They don't play Kansas State.
Wow, tough one, Steven. Remember, it's
Big
12
it's
now.
The new schedule.
It's the Big 16. Fuck.
SMU and TCU.
That's just wrong, and they're scared.
SMU, TCU, Iron Skillet game. I love these games where like an Atlantic team comes to Texas and plays a Texan team.
Stop it.
So
stop that
SMU
bit.
And the Bojangles boys coming into the DFW. Shame on TCU, by the way, which is pausing this series and admits that it's doing so and says we got to retain scheduling flexibility.
Scared to compete.
Weak shit. It's weak shit. I mean, it's just weak shit. And this is on you, TCU.
All right. Western Kentucky at Troy, this would have been the greatest G5 application of unstoppable force and movable object if it was last year.
The Troy agenda took yet another hit with the James Madison loss last weekend. The defense is not as good as it was, and the offense appears to have not made progress. Not what you want to see. Saturday, mid-afternoon window, BYU, Kansas.
Why? This note of yours, and this is hilarious to me. I'll just read it out loud. Lance Leipold caused a minor internet flap when he said BYU is a mature team because their average age is 22. Yeah, they're always mature.
He's right. No, I know what he's talking about.
When is that not a thing?
As in, you know, a couple dozen people talking about
Lance Leipold.
There's exactly one college football team in America where I can go and talk about what it's like to get two kids ready in the morning to the fucking players, and it's BYU.
Well, Virginia has a 35-year-old kicker. Come on. Okay.
He ain't got fucking multiple kids.
Lance Leipold. Yeah, he does. He has three kids. Lance Leipold.
Oh man.
Did
my apologies.
Say
I'm
something
there
to
with
the,
you. Something. Send me a jersey.
Lance Leipold did say something to the effect of BYU is a mature team. They have a lot of older guys. Apparently, I have been informed BYU fans do not like it when you do that. They think it's a crutch.
They do not.
They think it's fake, whatever. Y'all have to get over it.
Y'all, they also get mad when you say they play dirty, and then you put on the tape of their O-line, and they play fucking really dirty.
What you think, I think what is happening here with BYU and BYU fans, and I got into one of these myself earlier this year after I said older, mature team on this show, is that BYU fans are sick of it because they think it's a trope, and they think, more importantly, that you are using that to say that it is somehow less than, somehow it doesn't count when they win games. Nobody's saying that, but it's just math. Jeremy Mouse, who's a Western college sports journalist, did an analysis. Yeah. Their average age is 21.7. Some BYU reporter for, I believe, the Deseret News said that it's not true when Leipold said their age was 22. Come on now, 21.7, 22, we're not doing that. But also, I don't mean it as a crutch. I don't mean like, oh, I'm not making your wins less than. It's just, there is no way, and by the way, there's no national data on every college football player's age. It is impossible that 21.7 as an average age is not one of the oldest teams in college football. That is impossible.
That's just how the sport's constructed.
You go to college when you're 18 years old, roughly.
You know what happens every time Army and Navy go through an entire, I'm serious, and Air Force go through an entire game and they don't commit a penalty? That they're like, well, it's the discipline of the service academy. Like, it is, but it's also the fucking discipline of the service academy, I guess. Like, I mean,
yeah, let us have our trips, especially when they're true. Colorado,
you're all blonde,
Oregon,
and beautiful, and you all have money in your basement. Why are you getting mad at us? If anything, we should be learning from you.
Colorado, Oregon, we've already hit the maximum of Colorado talk this week. So, Richard, I want one sentence on what the interesting schematic part of this game is.
Ooh.
Real quick before I answer that on BYU. BYU fans, you're going to have to get used to maybe hearing that a little bit more because you're playing teams that have never played you and do not play you and are doing it for the first time. Lance Leipold was kind of saying some stuff because it's the first time he's ever played BYU however long. Colorado, Oregon boils down to very quickly. Are Bo Nix and the lads... How good of a time are they going to have in this game without Travis Hunter on the other side? I think Dion said that Cormani McClain won't go in this game. I'm not entirely sure about that. I think I saw that somewhere this week. I think Oregon may be in for a very good time in this game. Maryland, Michigan State. How are we feeling here from our Maryland correspondent?
We do this every year because we talk about, you know, I'm inclined to talk about my own school. This is one of those games where if you're Maryland, and you're trying to show that you've made some real progress as a program, you put Michigan State in the dirt in this game. You establish very clearly that you are the fourth best team in the Big Ten East, which is your ceiling as a program when the other three are going well. But seriously, like, we could win 9 games this year. We could. It's right there. But it has to include winning this game because it will not include Michigan, Penn State, Ohio State. So win this game.
Absolutely. My favorite part of the show is when these two moments line up, which is Ole Miss, Alabama, and we trying to competitively denigrate our alma maters. This feels like a Cutcliffe year. This feels so much like a David Cutcliffe year at Ole Miss, which specifically means like, oh, hey, like things are looking good. The offense is really solid. Like the roster's like, we feel like the roster's pretty complete going into like a week 4, week 5 matchup against 42-7. With everything that's gone on with Alabama's offense, this is hands down the most confident I can tell you that Ole Miss has felt as a program. Don't worry about how they felt as a fan base, because it just really revolves around Vineyard Vines and cocaine. The Ole Miss coaching staff, by the way, shout out to Andy Staples. This weird war that's going on, I kind of want to lean into this conspiracy theory. I don't know if you guys have seen this yet. Lane, via a friend of mine, Ben Garrett, who covers Ole Miss, has covered Lane Ole Miss for years. I used to do a podcast with him a long time ago. Put out this whole thing that Kevin Steele is not actually coordinating the defense. Did you guys see this? He has Lane dumps all this out at a media availability, crazy detail, the kind of shit you normally have to pry for off the record, and like, nope, he just dumps it out.
I didn't know
media availability
did respond.
That it's actually T. Rob doing the defense. It's not Kevin Steele. It's based off this. Of course, Saban has to comment on this, and of course, he's mad about it. Andy, I guess he did. But here's my favorite part. So then Lane comes in for his midweek presser. And this is Andy's theory, but God bless him. Because whether it's true or not, I love it. Andy put their pressers side by side and played them simultaneously. Lane might be doing a bit where he's actually physically representing as Nick Saban. The face, the hands.
He ain't doing a bit.
The tenor,
he ain't doing a bit. He's auditioning.
He might be that too. But yeah. I was like, oh, that's one thing on that. Oh my God. Like it was like, what a preposterous thing. We're all trying to create content every day. Like maybe Andy's, oh my God. It was perfect.
I get it. I get why it's a big deal or a deal. And I don't want to like completely brush it aside. I do want to add that like sometimes on defense, one person calls the front and another person calls the coverage. It's not the rarest thing on God's green earth for that to happen. So there can be potentially some nuance involved here in the situation, but I am not saying that is not illuminated. Godfrey. It's fascinating.
Nope. I don't think any of it matters. And there's one thing in case you've forgotten, not y'all, but in case the audience has forgotten, part of this is Lane being Lane loves to upset the old man. He loves to do this. He does it all the time. That's part of it. The second part of it is this. Alabama's old defensive coordinator, who was hands down their number one pariah in the modern Bama era, like after Lane gets there and before Lane gets there, the two eras of national title Alabama under Nick Saban, Pete Golding was held up as everything that was wrong with Alabama anytime they did not win a national title. Pete Golding is now the defensive coordinator at Ole Miss. If Pete Golding and the Ole Miss defense holds this obviously wounded, problematic scheme that's going on, bad quarterback play, if for some reason it all happens and Pete Golding's defense holds Alabama to under like 20 in a loss, Alabama fans are going to be fucking distraught. I'm just letting you know. This is one of those. This is like the most fine bomb of narratives.
Just want to point out that if you perceive the sport in the way that Godfrey often perceives it, which is, you know, based on sort of narrative philosophy, like understanding the psychological, cultural parts of this sport, I understand why you think Ole Miss is going to go in here and get killed the way that they do. You just looking at the football teams. I think Ole Miss is going to win the game. I think Ole Miss is going to pull off an upset in this game. It's the moment's there. I think they're going to win the game.
I'm not going to dismiss this out of hand. Absolutely not. I've watched this Alabama team in person one time. I am very interested in what this Jalen Milroe game plan is going to look like on Saturday. Are you,
Richard? Do you lean heavy in one direction?
Yes,
to
dude.
Fix this?
You 12 personnel and run the fucking hell out of the ball. You run it till I stop it. Then you run it again just to make sure.
Okay.
Like I just like,
cause that
he gives you,
Ole Miss is still like they're light in the ass comparatively. Look, so that might be
player safety.
That might be how you win the game.
Player safety concerns aside, that young man may be having IVs on the sideline. He's running so much because it gives you that element of the offense. I don't want to do the 4D chess with the USF game all the way.
Okay.
But there is just a little bit of me.
I love
just
this.
Just a little bit of me.
Yes. Yes, Church.
That wonders.
Yes. Yes, Church.
That wonders if that was on purpose on Saturday. And I don't all the way believe it.
Yeah.
I don't even.
God is my shit.
I don't even plurality. Hey, I don't even plurality believe
hey,
it.
Hey, Richard.
Oh, I love this so much. Wonder,
they were
man.
Secretly putting it. Here, I'll do it. You're a respectable member of the national media and I'm not. Here's what they did. They held him out for a week and they started the other kid because Tommy has been secretly installing a new offensive scheme that they're going to unload on Lane to keep the ball out of Jackson Dart's hands. And it's going to work. Alabama's going to win 31 to like 9 or 13. There's going to be a shitload of Ole Miss turnovers in the second half.
Just
that's
stop.
What's going to happen.
Just stop.
What?
You're embarrassing yourself. Steven, just so you know, Ole Miss already played a road game this year against a top 25 team without a quarterback. It was Tulane. They won that game.
Good Lord.
They're going to win this game. Mm. Sorry, I had to say it. I don't know if I actually even believe it, but I had to say it.
I do
think they're going to win. I think Ole Miss is going
to
win the game.
Who's trying to gin up the most angry tweets out of this fucking bit?
I think Ole Miss is going to win this. I think this is... I mean, they've beaten Alabama before. It has happened. I think this is the moment
they are,
for it to happen.
I think they are a considerable on-paper favorite.
I don't actually know what the spread is in this game. I think the SP plus spread, what it is for Alabama,
like
7.5 favorite. It opened, and that was way too many points. UCLA and Utah. I think a good one here, teams that are somewhat similar in the way that they approach business. I don't know the quarterback situation for Utah, however, and that is a big overhang on this game.
Richard, if let's just say, regardless if Cam plays or not for Utah, if UCLA wins this game in a somewhat convincing fashion, can you find a more commanding or definitive Chip Kelly UCLA win? Don't and please don't say LSU, because we found out that
team
was
butt. Didn't they beat Utah last year?
I think
they did.
Don't remember.
Did they do it
when they were undefeated? Did they do it when they were undefeated in this climate of Pac-12-ness?
This is a Rising thing.
No.
They don't know if Rising is going to play, which means I don't know if Rising is going to play, and we don't know if Rising is going to play. You would imagine that their quarterback backup plan is a lot more situated than it was against Baylor. I think they played a sister of the poor on Saturday. Can't remember who it was. Didn't matter. So
North Carolina Central, and they played five quarterbacks. You're talking about a UCLA?
No, Utah. I'm talking about Utah.
Oh,
yeah. Sorry. I'm talking about Utah's quarterback situation.
Weber, I think they played Weber.
Might have been Weber last week. Yeah.
Yes. So you got your quarterback.
It was a good team. It was actually a pretty good team.
You got your quarterback plan figured out. If it's not Rising, you're good to go on Saturday against UCLA, and then it's a close game. And honestly, I think it's frankly pretty much quite of a toss up.
All right, I might rescind that whole phrasing then, just so I don't get yelled at. Like, maybe it's not the most definitive game, but I think this is the most complete UCLA that we've seen under Chip. That's what I was trying to get at. Even minus DTR.
Oklahoma State, Iowa State, anxiety bowl of the week here, in my opinion.
No, I don't want to talk about this. No, you're right about anxiety. I just don't want to talk about the game because, Jesus.
It could be an ugly game. Mike Gundy is trying to put a happy face on things at his press conference this week. He had a long answer where he's like, I actually felt better, paraphrasing, I felt better about our game where we lost 33-7 at home to South Alabama after watching the tape than I felt leaving the stadium. He says he doesn't think we have major problems.
Shit, okay. No.
Okay. Rice USF, this is a cautious optimism game. One that I would not have thought would be
on the schedule here.
Wouldn't have thought it would have been on the tasting menu before the year, but Rice won the city of Houston this year, and USF was competitive against, well, what's possibly a Citrus Bowl team. I don't know.
Defense
I
good.
Mean, there's defense good, Citrus Bowl. UTSA, Tennessee. This one is less exciting to me than it was before the season.
It's tough.
Careful.
Yeah. So, Frank. Yeah.
What's the Frank Harris update?
We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. Careful on that, by the way, that USF Rice thing. If USF bamboozles Rice up front, similarly to how they bamboozled Alabama at some points in time up front, that's going to be a long day for JT Daniels. I can tell you that right now. UTSA and Tennessee. I think Tennessee. This sort of becomes the thing that I talk a lot about with Tennessee. Can you like procedurally play with them? I don't know that UTSA can't, but this is what I talk about.
Oh, okay.
Like, can
I gotcha.
You
yeah.
like functionally play a game of football with them?
This would be a good week for Tennessee's quarterback to hit the fucking 12-yard out or the slant instead of the 85-yard like back of the foot
because
shit.
Here's the thing, I don't think Tennessee is as Adwater instant this season because of that. That's what I'm saying.
Correct.
Like, I don't
correct. Absolutely yeah,
but then again I go back to the fact that like there is event like there's gonna be a game where he just uncorks 5 50-yard balls just because of the nature of his arm in this offense, and they're gonna smoke somebody because of it. And I don't know if it's this, I don't know when it is, but that is going to happen this season on like a law of averages basis because of just the construct of what they do on offense and what he is as an arm talent.
Yeah.
This is the Saturday evening slate. App State at Wyoming. Already told you a lot about Nate Noll for App, really good running back. The defense for App has been more questionable, and this is sort of the toss up for them that makes the difference between a season that you could be really happy with.
Choose to think that Texas was slow at your own risk.
Mm-hmm.
Choose to think last week that Texas was slow or foggy at your own risk. I think this is the best team in the Mountain West.
This is it would be nice to see Wyoming get it together and win this conference. That obviously has not happened in a really, really long time. This is one of the better looking games of the week. you would think that this would be a tight one score game and pretty competitive, and you know it'll be a good atmosphere in Laramie. Arkansas,
I think it's going to be a crazy. Sorry, it's going to be a crazy atmosphere in Laramie.
Arkansas LSU.
This is the minority coach of the week in an interesting schematic spot. It's Travis Williams, Arkansas's defensive coordinator. Remember, minority coach of the week in an interesting schematic spot is not an achievement award. It's not a portender or a predictor of success. It's just taking a minority coach in a schematic spot and saying, huh, it's kind of interesting. LSU's offense, buddy, that was something on Saturday against Mississippi State. How can Arkansas slow them down and respond? Again, you know, LSU gets the running backs back. LSU gets Malik Nabers going. LSU gets Jaden Daniels going. It gets Jaden Daniels not kamikazing himself into the air against defenders. Gets him to settle down a little bit. And then on defense, LSU blitzed the hell out of. I don't mean like brought six people. I sort of mean that more like the literal sense. I mean like really like came after Mississippi State. So, but on defense, how does Arkansas? Can Arkansas slow this team down at all? And is, I think, in general for Arkansas, what Arkansas are we looking at? Are we looking at the Arkansas that I think or thought coming into the season may be something of a diminishing returns? You know, we might be done here in a sense of the fun Arkansas that we've seen the last couple of years because of the coordinator change? Or is it still going to be the Arkansas that's just a tough out?
Yeah. Looks to me, I think, they might be dismissed quickly in this game because of LSU's offense, but let's see. Oregon State
smashed
Washington State.
Alex, Mesh Point. You want to talk about Mesh Point real fast?
Oh, I do. We have a newsletter now, and it's free. It's completely separate from the splits into a Patreon, and we have not, if you're a Patreon subscriber, ported your email address over to that because we didn't want to do that. Go to splitsonduo.substack.com. splitsonduo.substack.com. And you have access to a free Split Zone Duo newsletter. I wrote in this newsletter last week, and again, separate from Patreon, got to keep, you know, we keep things separate. This is a different way for us to tell interesting little stories that didn't quite fit onto the podcast. The short version of the story that we told last week at splitzoneduo.substack.com, please sign up, is that Oregon State and Washington State are waging a holy fight right now against the Pac-12's office, which claims it's being neutral, but doesn't seem to be. And the other Pac-12 schools, really the eight other, because USC and UCLA have already been sort of kicked out of conference governance matters. The Pac-12 schools that are all going to other conferences forgot to vote to dissolve the conference or whatever, or to change the voting rules before they left. And so Oregon State and Washington State believe that they have control of this conference and could use it maybe to do a reverse merger with the Mountain West. There's a big fight going on. George Kliavkoff is being utterly useless as he has been for the majority of his tenure as this conference's commissioner. And we root for both of these teams in that fight to wind up with what they're fighting for. In terms of this game, I lean towards Oregon State on the road. I think this is a really good Oregon State team again. Like won 10 games last year, has a decent shot to do that again this year. And if you look at kind of the way that the Pac-12 scheduling draw worked out for Oregon State, like you're looking at a possibility of them being favored in every game they play, maybe until mid-November. We'll see where the Utah spread winds up. That's a home game for them against Utah. It's a home game for them against UCLA. Oregon State in a big bowl game is not an impossible thing, and I would obviously love to see it happen.
No, that's a good football team.
Oregon State Rose Bowl.
Okay.
Iowa. Okay. At Penn State.
Oh, not a Rose Bowl. Sorry, that's a playoff. Whatever. Okay. You knew what I was
doing.
A
New Year's Six Bowl. Iowa at Penn State. A thing that we are monitoring for Iowa is that their special teams are merely 30th in SP Plus so far this year. They are still last. So we said before the year that Iowa would be less committed to the bit. Last year, they were 91st in first defense, offensive SP Plus. This year, they're 81st in first. So they are actually getting a little bit more even on both sides of the ball.
Technically, are we still in 2022 data though?
No,
nope, I thought SP rolled.
Nope. Well, it's not phased out. It's not. It's still used as projections, as Bill would tell you. I am wondering a bit about if Iowa can possibly hang in this game with the firepower that Penn State has. My guess is no. I don't think
the only
so.
Thing. The only thing I'm looking for here is pure proof of concept from the Penn State offense And historically, this is, I've talked to a lot of Penn State assistants over the years, and there's like an Iowa phenomenon.
Didn't they beat them like
good teams,
like 17-7 a couple years ago or something?
That's many times. That's where I'm headed with this. Good teams go to Iowa City and very, very often play like Iowa to escape Iowa. It's like a weird horror movie.
This game
trope,
is in Happy
I'm
Valley.
I'm not kidding.
Though. Yeah.
Ooh.
Oh, sorry. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. But anyway, Iowa specifically can vex Penn State this way. It has happened in Happy Valley as well, where they just somehow reduce themselves to Iowa. I don't know if this is a vestige of offenses of old. This looks like the best Penn State offense we've seen since Saquon McSorley Moorhead. But what I would like is a nice fat 28 plus margin of victory, which I think is possible based on the talent of this team in this offense, before we can then start having conversations about Penn State, playoff. This is the first week. This is the first data point I need to even start that conversation. Is that fair?
So you're kind of Illinois sucks. You're kind of in a do the business mode here with them.
I mean,
dude, like, I mean, West Virginia, Illinois, like, I need something so we can start talking about them differently and not feel completely hoodwinked just in case. I mean, you tell me if I'm wrong.
They won a Rose Bowl last year. I think they're serious. Memphis and Mizzou. Richard, building block opportunity for Mizzou after an uplifting victory.
Yeah, man.
This game's low key good. What happened?
If you got it, let me see it, because you know Memphis wants this one. You know Memphis.
This was supposed to be an anxiety bowl. I actually circled this like preseason that this was going to be an anxiety bowl. It's definitely not now. Obviously, it's going to be fun to watch too. Like good offenses.
Sure, we love to see that. For Memphis, this is sort of the like Memphis might win the American this year. Like they could be good. I think it is also still possible that Silverfield is fired by Christmas. It really could go either way, and we will get some indicator of the direction. Am I wrong about any of that?
No, it's funny. I've never heard you ride on a firing like this ever.
I'm not
like
riding on it. Like no,
you're
I was
usually
last
yinning
year.
Our yangs.
No, like, I'm not riding on it. They decided not to do it, and they're 3-0 this year. So I'm not doing that. I had the wrong read last year. I thought with the way that they were talking about portraying themselves after they missed out on the Big 12 invite that they wouldn't be as patient as they have been with him. I think it was a buyout issue at the end of the day, but he's 3-0 and this would be a great win if they could get it. So like, that's what I mean. I'm honestly not trying to.
So we talk about this every time we talk about Memphis and like, I didn't love their defense against Navy, although I do think Navy has improved a bit. Like, I'm curious how complete they are to win the American, but I don't know. Maybe we don't have to do the bit this week, but like Memphis's problem relative to conference expansion has nothing to do with their head football coach. I say that every week.
Yes, but I think that they understand that the path, as it was for UCF, as it was for Houston, the path to improving your lot and realignment life involves being better at football. And like, I thought that that might play into their general thought process, but it's so far working out fine. They're 3-0. We've
the
been podcasting
here
for like an hour and 45 minutes and we have not mentioned
this is what I want. Anyway, I was going to try and jump in front of you on this. And so I swear to God, I'm not going backwards and I'm not going to make the show any longer than it has to be. This is the Deion effect. Boys, Ohio State and Notre Dame, what are they? 6-9 or 7? Like a top 10 matchup. Ohio State and Notre Dame, the quintessential definition of an American helmet game. Like two of maybe like probably the two actually biggest brands by definition in those ways, like the way that those market research firms do that.
Arguably the two biggest.
Right. Sometimes Michigan lays claim in there, like, but what I'm saying is that this is happening and we have punted this shit to the back of the show as if it is a Pac-12 North game or something that no one gives a fuck about. So part of that, I'm going to set you guys up, is that all I want to say about this game is let's all learn who we are together. Because I have questions in all four phases on both sides of both teams. I don't want to make any stupid statements now. I feel like we're going to learn a lot because we haven't had good data points up until this weekend. Fair?
I am going to be somewhere on a highway, probably in Central Oregon, while this game kicks off. I'm going to try to see as much of it as I can live because it's, I think it's so fascinating on both ends, man. You've got a Notre Dame team that I think, like, reduced to a bit last year, which was if you just dropped a quarterback into it, what would they be? Well, they just dropped a quarterback into it, and they might be pretty damn good. Like, really damn good.
If Notre Dame wins this game, then Notre Dame playoff becomes an extremely relevant thing to contemplate.
Sure.
Like, they would be ranked in that area. Does anyone else think it's weird
that Sam Hartman went to Notre Dame and suddenly, like, really, really, really resembles velvet Jesus paintings? Like did that you see in Catholic churches?
Yeah, the opposite of the clean
cut. No, like, when you go to a rectory or you go to, like, a common room or whatever in a Catholic church, they have this, like, one velvet painting of, like, a fairly Caucasian-ish Jesus, but, like, maybe has, like, a little Italian or Greek in him. But, like, and then you see Sam Hartman on the sideline, and you're like, whoa, like, he looks like Jesus now.
I think the nature of this game that makes it most fascinating is Ohio State's defensive front for real. Because Notre Dame up front is. And I think what Notre Dame does up front, this is one, I love a week one, big one. But I am really glad this is in week four. Like, this is one of the things where it's like,
that's a great point. Yeah.
Like, this is where, like, get your preseason out of the way and then let's see the seriousness. To an extent, I'm happy this game is in week four and not week one, because last year it was in week one and it was,
Well, it just wasn't telling of the complete body of work, whereas we might have a better chance to understand these teams through the end of the regular season based off of what happened Saturday. And I can tell you for a fact, Alex, you will have full pitch, fever pitch anxiety from Ohio State if Notre Dame runs on them effectively, because they are going to be thinking about that funny looking helmet after Thanksgiving, running on them effectively.
Kicker intrigue for me. Notre Dame has a guy in from USF. His name is Spencer Schrader. Has already knocked home a school record 54-yard field goal for Notre Dame. Missed a few long, long ones as well, but he's got a big, big leg. I think this game is going to be really close. Going to be a nice October evening in South Bend. I'm wondering if the big leg Notre Dame kicker from USF might wind up playing a decisive role in this game one way or the other. We'll find out. We'll see if it's that close. Nightcapper, USC at Arizona State. Arizona State is on roughly its 10th quarterback. Jaden Rashada hurt. Trenton Borgett hurt. Drew Pine hurt. That's a three-pack. Wow, I didn't even realize when we did the hurry up.
They're bad, which
I didn't even realize this. I knew they were down to three. I did not realize they were down to four. They were down to four. They played a true freshman, Jacob Conover, with four stars next to his name, but he couldn't do anything against Fresno. It wasn't a fair situation for him to be in. So congrats to Alex Grinch in advance on pumping up those numbers. But the point is, I don't know exactly who will play for Arizona State, because Arizona State, as Godfrey mentioned, is doing one of those gag order things on media. So all of the Arizona State media have to, like, lie or pretend they don't know who's been practicing. So we don't know who will play for Arizona State. It seems like it might be this youngster, Jacob Conover.
This is our media restriction bowl, Alex. Do you want to cook on this one? I feel like this is your wheelhouse more than anybody's.
That's on one side. That's on one side, because what's happening on the other with USC is an absolute joke, in my opinion. Like, look, Lincoln Riley, and Alex, I'm sure, concurs here. Look, Lincoln Riley has never been the most open with the media coach of all time. This was absolutely a thing at Oklahoma. Ask anybody who covered that program when he was there. Yeah. This has reared its ugly head here. I'm not going to go all the way into it. Long story short, a young reporter in, I believe, his first year on the beat wrote a story in which he used a conversation that a player was having off to the side with a teammate before he got to the podium as sort of color to the story. Then he got to the podium and gave the quotes. I frankly thought it was the most innocuous and nice anecdote. You look for anecdotes when you are a reporter, especially when you're at a press conference and 15 people are writing the same story about the same.
100% of the time I'm doing that.
It was a flattering story, I felt like, and it was a nice story about a young man. It was the most innocuous thing. It was a nice story. Like, it, I don't know, man. And before I let Alex kind of take the ball here and run the ball, what is wild to me is that every time this thing happens, one of the big things that is missed is that letting your players and your coaches talk to the media is a way of development. of the person, of the player, of the coach, whatever we want to talk about. Like, God, enough is enough. Enough.
If you are going to come out here and tell us on Fox and ESPN and all these other controlled environments with licensed partners, and you're going to do this and say, we're an NFL development program, you need to shut the fuck up and let these kids talk. Because when they get to the NFL, they will do that. And you will not have a fucking shot collar around their necks. It is unacceptable. It is also cowardice. And it reeks of insecurity. Full stop.
A lot of USC fans, very discouragingly, seem to want to be less informed about the program that they root for.
I saw those people harassing you on. Yeah. Alex caught some grief on Twitter.
But this is fucking insane. I want to be clear about a few things. The reporter, I guess, broke USC's rules that, you know, take quotes from players outside of sterilized press environments where they're standing at a podium. That rule, to be clear, only exists because Lincoln Riley is the head coach at USC. And there's a lot of college football coaches who have similar policies, but it's because Lincoln is a paranoid control freak who believes that the media is going to prevent him from bringing USC to the pinnacle of college football. He probably thinks that those prying reporters in Norman are the reason they never figured out how to stop anybody. There are stories galore that have gone around for years about the way that he would, you know, at one point, Oklahoma's football program had dorm windows frosted in Norman because they could see the practice field. Like, he's a very controlling guy, and he has these rules so that he can sort of set a narrative for his program. I just want to be clear that these policies are not about protecting the young men. The reporter here called the kid's dad, and the dad laughed about it and gave him an on-the-record quote for the story. No one is saying that the Southern California newspapers need to be able to put microphones in the football dorm rooms and have 24/7 access to anything they want. It's just Lincoln Riley is a control freak, and USC's athletic director and president, and even sports information director, though I don't think the sports information director gets to make these calls. I think this is up the food chain, acting childishly. And the purpose of this kind of suspension, a 2-week suspension for this reporter, is to warn other USC beat writers, don't do things we don't like. I mean, that's what they're doing. I think if you're cheerleading for it, of course, USC can do it. They have the right to do it. But if you're cheerleading for it, you're rooting to be less informed about the team that you watch. You are forgetting that Lincoln Riley works for your school, that your school doesn't work for him. And you are rooting for sports media to be worse and more sterile. And
let us know how you feel after they lose. Let us know how you feel after they lose and you can't find out why.
Well, also, Godfrey, and this is already like the longest episode we've ever done, so why not make it a minute longer? It's dumb on USC's part. Like, it's going to engender hostility from the press corps towards USC. And I think Lincoln forgets that, like, in a place like Norman, Oklahoma, you can be as abusive as you want to the media, and they still got to give you attention because it's Oklahoma football in Norman, Oklahoma. This isn't probably very interesting. I actually recently moved out to Los Angeles. I'm podcasting from Southern California now. I don't know much about LA. I've been here for like 2 or 3 weeks, but I do sense that you don't walk around the street and see everyone being like, oh, USC football is so good, I got to pay attention to this team.
Maybe.
I've seen one piece of USC clothing on the street in 2-3 weeks here. And my point is, local media in LA have a lot of things to do, a lot of things to cover. I think Pete Carroll understood this well. He made sure that there was a lot of local media attention on USC. I'm not saying that like people are going to stop covering USC, but it's just not. He's picking a fight for no useful reason, in my opinion. Making himself less convenient for local media to cover, which isn't a great idea in a big city.
I want the Fourth Estate. I don't mind saying that. I want us to stop being afraid. It is economically driven, and large newspapers and large media outlets, we can't figure it out, and we just finished a 12-year experiment with VC-funded.coms and patreon.com/SED is the result. Listen to me. Stop being afraid. They need you. stop being afraid. If I was in that press corps, I would go over the top, not in a disrespectful or unprofessional way, but if I see someone else who would be a rival of mine at another newspaper treated that way, take whatever it is he was trying to find out or the manner in which he comported himself that they didn't like and do it. That's your job. That's the job. Stop being afraid of these people. USC is trying to build itself out of irrelevancy. It's part of the reason the Pac-12 died. Like, well, I wrote about that in the Post this week. It's easy for me to sit here and say,
stop being afraid. Yeah. It would be easier for the powerful institution to stop threatening reporters' livelihoods and their abilities to do
work.
We don't need media access to do splits undo, which is probably why I'm so brave right now on this podcast. I don't know that I would be as brave if I needed to go to practice to do my job to cover USC football.
That's what I'm saying is you should be.
I would like to maintain relationships.
I'm not saying this is one of those things. Like, you have to maintain relationships to be on a beat. And you make small concessions in terms of access and disclosure and little tiny things, you do. It's part of it as a beat writer. You have to maintain a positive relationship with the school that you cover every single day. This is beyond that. Do not abide a bully. I'm telling you to stand up. And also, like, there's this weird thing when football coaches walk in the room, like, there's this, like, intimidating physical presence. Guy, I'm too old to give a shit about that. You're not going to intimidate me that way. If you're saying something stupid or I'm calling you to account for something, you're a millionaire. Okay? The day that we don't show up, you stop making at like one comma's worth of money. That's how this works. That's your job. I'm so tired of this. I see it when I do go to media availabilities and I see these coaches on this like just absolutely condescending and bullying. Go back at them. Go back at them. I don't care what people say on Twitter. I get it. Post the last, 30, 40 years in the millennial era, we've decided we can attack the media for doing... Attack back! He's just Lincoln Riley, dude. He ain't going to do nothing to you. He can't cook meat either.
He really overcooks a brisket.
All right, you got me out of the series. All right. Let's go home. I'm done. In LA, nobody's cooking brisket in LA, right? I'm going to get somebody mad about that.
I haven't learned yet. I don't know. If anyone's got any advice on what to do out here, I have no idea. Thank you.